really believe that the pagans and the abortionists and the feminists and the gays and the lesbians, the ACLU, People for the American Way, all of them who tried to secularize America, I point the thing in their face and say, you helped this happen.
Why is it that...
Oh, my God. Good evening, Truth Seekers. Malloy here on the Nova M Radio Network. Boy, you get gone for a week, you come back, all hell breaks loose, so to speak, right? Farewell to Falwell night tonight. He was found dead, as you all know by now, somewhere. I don't know, where was he found dead, Kathy? In his office?
On the toilet? Oh, no, that was Elvis.
No, that was Elvis, right. You're not supposed to speak ill of the dead. Oh, bat squeeze. The Right Reverend, Kathy wrote this, the Right Reverend Falwell has gone to that gay-hating, whitey-white heaven in the sky. God finally called him home, or somebody did, and he's at last at one with his glorious Savior, the one that hates all non-Christian, non-hetero, non-liberal, non-male, non-ACLU, non-Caucasian people on earth. You know, his kind of Jesus, swimming in eternal milky-white oasis of waspy bliss he is, or something. I'm glad the old bastard's gone. I swear to God, the earth is a little bit cleaner place tonight with the death of another one of these pigs. I am not one to get all mushy like Paul Begala did on Wolf Blitzer's program today. I was driving Molly someplace and I had CNN on my Sirius satellite radio, which came free in our car, and I heard Paul Begala and that freak from the one of the right-wing organizations that's on with him all the time. And Wolf, the former German U-boat commander, asked both of these guys, you know, what was Falwell's legacy? And Paul Begala, who, you know, I used to really like, gave the usual stuff about, well, we had a lot of disagreements, but, you know, I feel sad, and, you know, he was a good American. No, he wasn't. He was a hate-filled son of a bitch who should have died 50 years ago before he managed to do all of his evilness. Evilness? Screw you, Jerry. Hell just gained one more citizen tonight. Of course, there is no hell. And that's why I've always the one thing I've always just lusted after was that there would be some momentary post-death consciousness that we all pass through. Maybe there is. Where we enter the void, and before we blink out, like a star going out, before we blink out as we were before we were born, there's that momentary awareness of, wow, there really isn't anything. Falwell. Well, needless to say, I got an inordinate number of emails today celebrating this old bastard's death, this God-hating, Christ-defiling puke who is now no longer with us and no longer can do the kind of damage that he has done over the past 73 years to his fellows. On this planet, it's hard enough being alive without some son of a bitch like Jerry Falwell making it even more difficult and more difficult just to breathe. Just to breathe. Got an email here from Daniel. He said, Mike, welcome back. The grumblings and rumblings started earlier today on all the progressive message boards. How dare we make fun of a human being dying? Truth be told, most of us are good social liberals and value human life above corporate, quote, personhood, end quote, and greed. Tom Hartman often points out that whereas conservatives gauge morality on what people do in private, liberals gauge it based on what people do in public. The question stands, then, how can we as liberals, progressives, whatever, justify making fun of someone who has died? The answer, of course, is very simple, Daniel writes. Jerry Falwell was not a person. I don't mean that in the sense that he wasn't a living, breathing human being. I mean it in the sense that he was not a private individual. Jerry chose to live a public life and, as such, willingly allowed himself to become an abstraction of a human being. When people talked about Falwell, be it positive or negative, they were talking not about someone who they actually knew. They were talking about what he stood for, the statements that he made in public. Make no mistake about it. Those statements were carefully crafted to elicit a response from the listeners. To some, they were guidelines on how to live their lives. To others, they were bigoted, racist, homophobic remarks. Nonetheless, they were intended to be provocative. In most people's minds, there was no separation between the public persona and the man himself. The feelings that you had about his views necessarily became the feelings you had about him. When I say that I am as giddy as a schoolgirl that the bastard has passed on, do not confuse that sentiment with my liberal sensibilities about human life. I am referring solely to the public persona of a racist, bigoted homophobe. Jerry Falwell did not accidentally stumble into becoming a public figure. He chose to be one, and as such, deserves to be treated as an abstraction. From Daniel. And we got a couple more, most of which I can't read on the air because of the language. But I certainly get the point. A big thank you to Jeff Farias, who sat in for me, what, the entire week, Kathy? Oh, my God. And he did his own show? He did six. No, he didn't. I'm sorry? Oh, someone filled in for Jeff. Okay. Anyway, thanks, Jeff. I appreciate it. Now, irony of ironies, if you all ever go to the GodHatesFags.com website, you will see a press release. It's the Westboro Baptist Church. Is that from Kansas, Missouri, Oklahoma? Hell, I have no idea and don't care. But they will preach at Jerry Falwell's funeral. Here's the release. The Westboro Baptist Church will preach at the memorial service of the corpulent false prophet Jerry Falwell, who spent his entire life prophesying lies and false doctrines like God loves everyone. There's little doubt that Falwell split hell wide open the instant he died. The evidence is compelling, overwhelming, and irrefragable. To wit, 1. Falwell was a true Calvinistic Baptist when he was a young preacher in Springfield, Missouri, and sold his soul to free willism, whatever that is, for lucre. 2. Falwell bitterly and viciously attacked Westboro Baptist Church because of Westboro Baptist Church's faithful Bible preaching, thereby committing the unpardonable sin, otherwise known as the sin against the Holy Ghost. And 3. Falwell warmly praised Christ-rejecting Jews, pedophile-condoning Catholics, money-grubbing compromisers, practicing fags like Mel White and backsliders like Billy Graham and Robert Schuller, etc., all for lucre, making him guilty of their sins. Falwell is in hell. Praise God. This is a sick ass country. You know, it really is. Opie and Anthony, a couple of little turds that hang out on a CBS owned affiliate. Where in D.C. and carried by XM until they dropped the program. Opie and Anthony made reference to raping Condoleezza Rice or had somebody on. I mean, that was a big story the other day. So XM that carries their program, there's two versions. There's the version on the CBS-owned affiliate. And remember why they, deep-sixed Don Imus. So here's Opie and Anthony. Is that how you, Opie and Anthony? I don't even know. I don't care. I don't know who these people are and really don't care. I just know that they're right-wing talk show hosts and who attempt humor of the usual right-wing kind. It's usually about homophobic attitudes or sex, the way they perceive sex to be, or that kind of garbage. So they made some comments about what, Kathy? About raping the Queen of England and doing Condoleezza Rice or one of their guests did, and they guffawed and laughed. So I'm waiting for CBS to axe these two creeps. You know, get rid of them. If you got rid of Imus raping the Secretary of State, oh, my God. Rape is a crime of extreme violence. Ask the guards at Abu Ghraib. Oh, we live in a very, very strange time and place, Truth Seeker. All right, we have a lot of stuff here tonight that is just morbid as hell. Some stuff about Dr. Laura, and I have one more letter here from Travis in Sacramento about Falwell's descent into the Great Muddy and some other stuff. Stick around. This is going to be a strange night. First night back from vacation always is. So hang out with me, okay? I'm Mike Malloy. This is the NOVAM Radio Network.
When you turn your heart and your life over to Christ, when you accept Christ as a Savior, it changes your heart and changes your life.
It's an active interest.
I don't care if it rains or freezes, long as I got my plastic Jesus.
Come on.
Riding on the dashboard on my...
You know, I could go for what? Months and months and months and months and months without hearing any of this religious nonsense. I don't care if it's Christian, Jewish, or Islam. I'm just sick of all of it. You know what I'm saying? I really am. And, excuse me, the death of somebody like Falwell just kind of points it all up. How obscene all this God crap really is. How much violence and death and ignorance and craziness has been, is, and will continue to be perpetrated and committed in the name of some funky religion someplace. It's really disgusting. I read the first chapter, you can read it too, online, of Christopher Hitchens' new book, God Is Not Great. And it's worth reading. It really is. I used to really kind of trip on Christopher Hitchens until he went crazy. But he's a drunk, so, you know, eventually all drunks go insane. They go mad and become embarrassments. But I'm going to buy the book because this one looks like a good one. And Hitchens has a way of defiling any subject to a much greater degree, much more wit. He's kind of like Oscar Wilde in that respect. You know, he can slash and burn another person without the person even knowing they've been burnt and slashed until they try to take a step and they crumble into a pile of ashes someplace. But that's what all this has kind of brought up in me today, and obviously in a lot of you folks. The emails keep coming in here about the Falwell thing. I wish I could read them all because some of these are extremely creative in their rage against this sour and sorry old bastard who did more damage to people in this country. And I'm not just talking about women or feminists, as he would put it, or gays or witches or, you know, whatever he was badmouthed. Not just those groups, the ones that he targeted, suffered Jerry Falwell's lash, but the entire culture did. He and his filthy moral majority that employed more child molesters and women beaters and psychopaths than I don't know what organization offered safe harbor to those evil bastards to a greater degree than the moral majority. I can't think of one. Oh, okay. Well, other than the Catholic Church, the priesthood of the Catholic Church. But you know what I'm talking about. So Falwell, you know, all the blubbering and I don't get this. I really don't. This was an evil son of a bitch. I don't care by what standard you measure him. If you come at it with a logical or rational or reasonable mind, which means if you're religious, you can't do that. So that immediately eliminates a huge chunk of the American population. But if you are a humanist, a rationalist, someone whose mind is not turned into peanut butter by this God crap, if you can still think clearly, then Falwell was an evil, evil, evil man who perpetrated so much damage, so much badness. There's nothing good about him. And to see the whining and the bleating and the chest thumping now, I watched some freak on television tonight. Oh, he was my pastor and he was my mentor. And, you know, I grew up here in Lynchburg and I went to Liberty College and Jerry's been called home. No, Jerry hasn't been called home. The son of a bitch died. He's dead. He's over. He's done. His damage is finished. Dear Mike, this is from Travis. Today, during my lunch break, I was reading various online newspapers while tucked away inside my cubicle. One of those newspapers happened to mention that Reverend Jerry Falwell had died at the age of 73. Now, I consider myself to be a progressive-minded individual. What is more, I make a concerted effort to be a better person each and every day. Yet, in light of this recent event, Mike, I have to ask you something. Is it wrong for me to be happy, even just a little bit, that a reprehensible human being has finally kicked the bucket? The Reverend Falwell, in my opinion, was a hypocrite, a racist, a misogynist, an elitist, a homophobe, an anti-Semite, and a one-of-a-kind piece of pond scum. But why stop there? Falwell championed the rights of the unborn, this is true, but he also endorsed policies and candidates who did very little for those who survived the ordeal of childbirth. He hijacked altruistic-sounding phrases like family values, led an organization called the Moral Majority, and founded Liberty University, which resides in the aptly named town of Lynchburg, Virginia. And then, of course, there were his comments on my 28th birthday, September 13th of 2001, when he said to his colleague Pat Robertson on the 700 Club, yada, yada, yada. You remember that, right? But if that wasn't bad enough, Mike, there were the Reverend attack on Tinky Winky. Tinky Winky, Mike! We'll have more of this when we come back. I'm Mike Malloy.
And all I want to do is satisfy my Lord and be the bestest Christian boy. In all the whole wide world, I'll be a cowboy, a Christian cowboy. I'll work for Jesus all my days. And on the prairie or in the city, I'll help him round up all the
strays. This is the end. Beautiful friend.
It's okay, Republicans. The pain will be over soon. Take a deep breath. Find your happy place. It's more of Mike Malloy.
Of all the elaborate plans, the end of everything that stands, the end.
No mercy. Why should there be some kind of faux mercy shown to an evil individual like Jerry Falwell, who contributed so much to division, destruction, weirdness, anger, rage, hate, murder, mayhem, with his lectures and his so-called preaching? To hell with him! To hell with him! Back to what Travis from Sacramento wrote. He said, of course, there were Falwell's comments on my 28th birthday, September 13th of 2001, when he said to his colleague Pat Robertson on the 700 Club, quote, I really believe that the pagans and the abortionists and the feminists and the gays and the lesbians, as a matter of fact, let's just play it. Go ahead, Kathy.
I really believe that the pagans and the abortionists and the feminists and the gays and the lesbians, the ACLU, People for the American Way, all of them who tried to secularize America, I point the finger in their face and say, you helped this happen.
Well, here, let me point a finger in your face, Falwell, as I've done many times when your worthless ass was alive. But it's statements like that. I mean, my God. So he blames Dick Cheney's pregnant daughter for the attack on this country, to cite one example, of September 11th. This was a sick man. Anyway, Travis goes on, but if all that wasn't enough, Mike, there were the Reverend's attacks on Tinky Winky. Tinky Winky, Mike. Now, I don't know how many of you watch Teletubbies. Before Molly was born, it happened to be one of my favorite programs. There was something just LSD-ish about watching the Teletubbies. And I read an article about how the Teletubbies were created and formulated, put together as a almost a pre-birth children's program. You know, this was something they watched through their mommy's belly button when they're 8 months old, or in the womb 8 months old. It was just the strangest program. And there was a time in my life where you know, between watching the PTL Club and the Teletubbies, I was in bliss. That was television bliss, man. I'm reruns of the PTL Club because I don't think they dovetailed. When Molly was about 10 months old, she started watching Teletubbies. And she loved it. And she outgrew it. She outgrew it at about what, Kathy? 18 months? 22, about 24 months, she outgrew it.
Long before you did.
That's true. Long before I did. So now I have to watch it by myself. But when this thing came out when Falwell said the Tinky Winky was gay, oh, for heaven's sake, I just about lost it. Travis goes on. You see, Mike, like you, I too am cut from the same swath of cloth. I loathe religion, I despise ideologues, and I hate these bastards who are ruining our home, planet Earth, on behalf of the almighty dollar. However, to demonstrate to your listeners this evening that I am a progressive-minded person, I'm going to rise above the fray and conclude by saying the following. Dear Mrs. Falwell, Jeannie, Jerry, and Jonathan Falwell, I am truly sorry about the loss of your husband and father. And thus, I send to you my sincerest of condolences. But poor health, combined with an evil disposition, can only live inside a mortal shell for just so long. Be thankful the Reverend lived as long as he did. For my part, I am glad to know that he is no longer amongst the living. Sincerely, Travis from Sacramento. Like I say, I've gotten some very creative emails from people who apparently just didn't like Falwell. This is from Bob in Las Cruces, New Mexico. Interesting that it came from Las Cruces. Mike, when I heard about Falwell's death today, I thought of E.E. Cummings' poem entitled Buffalo Bill's Defunct. Buffalo Bill's defunct, who used to ride a water-smooth silver stallion and break 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 pigeons just like that. Jesus, he was a handsome man. And what I want to know is, how do you like your blue-eyed boy, Mr. Death? Dean in Connecticut, some thoughts on Falwell's death. Dean writes, when I first heard that Falwell had finally bought the farm, my gut reaction was, I hope it was nothing painless. If hell really exists, Dean writes, and Falwell is there tonight roasting... Oh, no, I can't read that part. Never mind the last part there, Dean. The first part was good enough. All right. Almost. Yes?
I just am reminded by the emails you got after Cheney's deep vein thrombosis diagnosis. Yeah. I hope it was painful.
I know. And this is from Cindy, who writes, things I heard on the Bob Kincaid show today at headonradio.com about Falwell's death. First one, they're going to have to screw him into the dirt. He was so crooked. And the second one, you know all those fires in Florida, all that smoke everywhere? Well, that was the gates of hell opening up for Falwell. Oh, my God. You people are merciless. You're merciless. You're just merciless. All right, so enough of stomping on Falwell's corpse. I frankly couldn't care less. I disagree with John Donne that, you know, no man is an island. Every man's death diminishes me, for I'm a part of men. How does it go? No man is an island unto himself. Each is a piece of the main, a part of the whole. Each man's death diminishes me, for I am a part of mankind. So send not for whom the bell tolls, it tolls for thee. I realize I'm garbling it up, but what the hell, it was written. When was that written, the 15th century or some damn time, 16th century?
I don't know. Were you there?
No, I was not.
Were you married then?
No, I was not. I don't get that about death. I don't think every man's death diminishes me. I really don't. As much as I respect the poet, I don't think that's the case at all. I'm an organism, you know. I'm about the same as a slug of bacteria on a slide somewhere, or a monkey, or a beetle. And I don't know what elevates me. What, the fact that my ego says that I'm You know, I am some kind of a creature unique because I have an ego, because I can perceive my own self. I'm self-aware, self-conscious. I don't know. I just know that I despise all religions. So enough about stomping on Falwell. He did his damage. His damage was, to some degree, will outlast him by decades, unless there is some sort of enlightenment that occurs on this planet. I say one down, about seven to go. In this country, Christian fundamentalists. There are also some Islamic fundamentalists that need to go meet Allah, and some Jewish fundamentalists that need to go have a chat with Moses. And I say, be gone with all of you. Here's the thing I wish. I just wish that these people who have spread so much bitterness and spite and hatred and contempt for other people, I just wish before they died they had some moment where they could say, look, I really screwed up. I really wasted my life with all this hatred and putting down other people, putting them down to a degree that diminished their humanity. You know, even Lee Atwater, the father of this sick, disgusting Republican Party's ability to demean and diminish just about anyone. Lee Atwater, the political operative who was so evil in the way he corrupted American politics, when he was dying of his brain tumor in, where was it, South Carolina, North Carolina, wherever it was, he had one of those deathbed moments where he tried to repent for all the damage that he had done. But the damage was already done, so, you know, and I'm sure Lee Atwater felt the need to do that in order to free himself from whatever kind of horror he expected was awaiting him beyond the pale, or beyond the veil, or, wherever he thought he was going. But I wish each one of these religious fundamentalist wackos who just make life miserable and painful and hurtful for so many thousands upon thousands of people, the support that this Christian faker showed for war, the support that he showed for bigotry and contempt and disgust for people as good or better than he ever would hope to have been, is immeasurable. The damage he did was immeasurable. So, to hell with it. Enough on Falwell. I gave him way too much airtime. But I just, like I said, one down, about seven to go. And maybe we'll talk about Robertson. I wonder if the Westboro Baptist Church will attend Pat Robertson's funeral.
Hey, is what's his name still a heterosexual?
Ted Haggard?
The next best thing to an impeachment hearing, it's Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio.
10 before the hour. God, I live in a society that has been so corrupted by people like Falwell that I devote 45 minutes of a radio program in snide comments about the man's passing. That's what these people have done. Now, that's not to shift responsibility. You know, I can talk about any damn thing that I care to, just like you can. But, again, to take a look at the damage this man has caused. And you know who these people are, just like I do, who have done this to this, who have coarsened the debate in this country. It all started with the right-wingers. It all started with these fundamentalists. It all started with the political right and the religious right. with their bigotry and their hatred and their smarmy comments and telling people they're going to burn in hell if they don't do this, and you know, their soul is condemned for all eternity if they do that. And you know, it's just I don't know. I don't mean to make it sound like I'm smacking my lips and rubbing my hands because this old bastard is dead. I couldn't care less about whether he's alive or dead, except for the fact that alive, he was doing so much damage to the already frayed fabric of this society.
I just got an email to the effect of, you know, the reason that the Right Reverend Falwell was opposed to Tinky Winky was because he was purple and he carried a purse and he had a little triangle on his antenna. And he said it would have been much better if he'd had a Jews for Jesus t-shirt on and a brown shirt and a swastika. Then it would have been a Falwell-approved Teletubby.
Yeah, well. Our correspondent over in Montgomery, Alabama, Daryl, who apparently has an inside track to this, sent me the press release Tinky Winky put out today. It says, the Teletubby star Tinky Winky released the following statement through his publicist this afternoon. Quote, needless to say, my long nightmare is over. The grief this man has caused me and my family over my perceived sexuality has been unbearable all these years. I faced great obstacles in finding gainful employment as a children's entertainer, a profession I loved, due to resulting negative publicity. All I can say today is good riddance, end quote. That's the most that Tinky Winky ever said, I think, right? Thanks to Daryl in Montgomery who sent the press release.
Other than, ooh, pudding.
You're right. Very quickly, some phone calls here. Susan is calling from El Paso. Hey, Susan. Hey, Susan.
When I first heard the news about Falwell, I was treating myself to a couple of rounds of Ding Dong, the Witch is Dead.
Right.
And then this rather vivid memory bubbles up to the surface. It was from like 1993 or 94. I was channel surfing one morning and I happened upon Falwell doing his Hour of Power, only instead of preaching, he was selling.
Yeah.
And he had all these anti-gay videotapes, you know, the gay agenda, and he had these videotapes of gay pride parade and all that stuff. And,
right.
And he's excitedly, he's doing the whole freak show Barker routine, excitedly telling you what's in on the tape. And he gets to bare-breasted lesbians marching down the street. And he's practically drooling all over himself.
Well, of course.
And I'm a lesbian. I thought I was going to hurl. I was like, oh my God. I mean, maybe it was like a new and novel way to turn lesbians off of sex. All they had to do was see that and go, oh my God.
right. Oh, what? I don't know what to say. But I hear you loud and clear, Susan. Thanks for checking in, okay?
Okay.
All right, you have a good night. Matthew is calling from Bedford, Texas. Hey, Matthew.
Mike.
Hey, Matthew.
I'm just so depressed about this whole Jerry Falwell thing. He was such a champion for democracy, wasn't he?
Well, sort of.
Sorry,
please.
I had to gag myself for a second. One of the first times I ever called you, remember when I had mentioned the sea of nothingness?
Yes.
In my vision for after death?
Yes.
Well, see, Jerry Falwell is the poster child for my argument that hell is too good for some of these people. And I wrote this on my blog the other day, or not the other day, but the other hour or so,
mm-hmm.
saying that I really hope that on his last seconds on Earth, he was so fear-filled and revealing how wrong he's been all these years.
Yeah.
Now, I hope now that he's entered the eternal abyss of nothing, he has enough consciousness or had, as you mentioned before, before his existence was hopefully erased, to notice how the pearly gates aren't there, how the shining kingdom of his quote, heaven is a non-existent.
Well, you know, I think every religious fundamentalist, no matter what religion to which he or she is a fundamentalist, subscribes to fundamentalism, if there is that flash of consciousness, post-death consciousness, I think that comes presents itself very clearly. Matthew, I have to leave it there. By the way, your phone is breaking up pretty bad tonight. Anyway, thanks for checking in. We are going to leave the topic of Falwell ensnared in this first hour of the program tonight. So when we come back from the break, we're definitely going to move on because there's other weirdness. Eleanor writes in, though, oh, hell, just give us the name of the person who found the body so I know who to send a thank you card to. For holding the plastic bag over his head to make sure, quote, it was soup, end quote. A polka, please. My needs are small. Eleanor. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Someone stole the kita while I turned my back. Who stole the kita? Who stole the kita? Who stole the kita from the butcher shop?
Hey!
Who stole the kita from the butcher shop? Yaka from the kita, Yaka from the kita, Yaka from the kita, young girl on the rack.
Hey!
He found the kita, he found the kita.
Welcome back. It's about 7 past the hour. During the break, Kathy reminded me that every time a Jerry Falwell dies, a fairy gets his earrings. Oh, that's a wonderful life, right? Speaking of Condoleezza Valdez, as Opie and Anthony were, or somebody on their program was, speaking of her in a way that just is out of bounds. I mean, it really is. It's like torture is out of bounds. Rape is out of bounds. All sorts of things are out of bounds. But anyway, you can add war profiteering to her list of felonies. We'll get to that a little bit later in the program. This selection today of Lieutenant General Douglas Loot. Could there be a better name for this guy, Loot, to take over as war czar? Loot, as in rape, pillage, and destroy. Loot. General Douglas Loot. Oh, my God. In his profile put out there by the Associated Press, it says he's a West Point graduate. He's 54. He had an extensive military career. He fought in the 1991 Gulf War. Do I have to remind anyone that the generals or whatever this guy was, surely of 16 years ago, if he wasn't a brigadier general, he was certainly a full colonel. But does anyone have to remind any of us that somebody who had that rank in 1991 didn't do any fighting? What he ordered was what resulted in a mass killing of about 200,000 fleeing Iraqi soldiers who didn't want to fight anyway. They were out there because this sorry son of a bitch that ran Iraq put them out there. And then the sorry son of a bitch that ran the United States, Pappy Bush, put the full force of the U.S. military on a bunch of ill-equipped so-called soldiers who couldn't fight, who were unable to fight, had no idea why they were there, and then they fled. They ran. They tried to run home. And you know, to say that somebody's I'm not talking about soldiers on the ground who had to face some immediate combat, but guys like Loot. What does it mean he fought in the 1991 Gulf War? I'd like to know what sort of fighting he did. He's been appointed war czar. What the hell is that? This is more outsourcing. This is outsourcing the commander-in-chief's job. Isn't that what Bush says he is? He's the commander guy? Or he's the decider? What is this? Outsourcing two wars to somebody who is outranked by the people who are actually making the decisions. How is he going to order? How is he going to order this General Loot? How is he going to order a four-star general to do anything? He's not. The Bush crime family is trying to avoid the term war czar. It has kind of a Condoleezza Rice sound to it, you know. War czar. Bush refers to Loot as the full-time manager for the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. What in the name of God is going on here? Hi, I'm the full-time manager of what? The insurance division of your company? No, of two wars. You're the full-time manager of a war? Bush said, quote, General Loot is a tremendously accomplished military leader who understands war and government and knows how to get things done. You dumb little bastard. What do you think Loot is going to do for you, huh? What does Bush think General Loot is going to do? It's insane. It's just insane. Couldn't they find somebody with a different name? Why General Loot? How about General Ransack? How about General Burglar? How about General Bomb? Why General Loot? How about General Pillage? Where in the hell do we all live? What is going on? We have people on television tonight praising this sick son of a bitch Falwell. And we have a war czar now, somebody who's going to manage two wars named General Loot. This is crazy. And I've got a slight case of laryngitis from screaming today when I heard that Falwell bit the big one. Do you remember Laura Schlesinger, Dr. Laura, this psychopathic right-winger who has a doctorate in physiology, I think, but she advises people on radio and stuff. She ignored her mother to the point that, you know, her mother died and rotted in her own house for about a week or 10 days before somebody said, hey, Laura, where's your mom? Oh, I don't know. And then they found her rotting at home. And the way it was explained was that Dr. Laura and her mother were, what's the term? Estranged, right? They were estranged. I can't handle Dr. Laura. That's why I'm so glad she's no longer available in the Atlanta market. Not that I listen to Atlanta radio at all, except I do listen to Z93, one of our rock stations here. But I can't listen to Schlesinger. I used to listen to her for the geek and freak factor, you know, of her. I mean, her callers were just, I don't know, her callers were all just absolutely corrupted, insane. They were like, I don't know, like somebody broke into the warehouse next to the factory where they kept all the stuff that didn't work, and they turned all these people loose, and they all went out and got telephones and called Dr. Laura about all their domestic problems. It was just outrageously funny program. If you were sick enough to enjoy it, which I was. Anyway, Laura Schlesinger, I'm sure you've seen the pictures of her. Woohoo! All over the internet. Have you seen those shots? Huh? You talk about leaving nothing to the imagination. And she tried to deny that there were pictures of her. I guess when you're as religious as Dr. Laura is, you first lie, and then when you can no longer lie, you try to sue the person who put the pictures out there. Anyway, that's a whole different story. But she was married to an Orthodox Jew, and she became Orthodox Jewish, and then she got she got rid of him or decided, now I'm going to be an Orthodox Christian. So she switched back to Christian fundamentalism. She's tried two of the three religions of the book now, so soon she will become, she'll wear a burqa and become a Muslim fundamentalist woman, I guess. I don't know. This is a sick person. But for some reason, advertisers and radio stations seem to like her. This is what I can't understand. You know, you take somebody like Tom Hartman, who has busted his ass for how many years, Kathy, trying to find sponsors and get on the air. And I'm not saying Tom Hartman has done a bad job for himself. He makes a living. But why wasn't a Tom Hartman ever syndicated the way a Laura Schlesinger? You understand what I'm saying. Anyway, Dr. Laura was in Salt Lake City last Friday to speak to Army families at Fort Douglas. And she had the absolute gall to say to these women, mostly, that she was tired of hearing the complaints of lonely and overwhelmed military wives whose husbands are deployed. She said, "You know, he could come back without arms or legs or eyeballs, and you're whining?" Jesus Christ. Schlesinger asked before taking the stage at the Base Theater to host her daily program on ethics, morals, and values. She says, "You're not dodging bullets, so I don't want to hear any whining. That's my message to them." The wives. Now, as far as women who are forced to leave their families to go serve in Bush's filthy, blood-soaked war, she refused to say how she felt about those women. She said, "I'm going to leave that alone. I'm not going to talk about that one." her son, Derek, can you imagine how screwed up this kid is? He was barely 18 when Laura forced him to join the military. And his tour of duty is overseas somewhere. Dr. Schlesinger declines to say where he's stationed, noting that that would put him at risk, quote, like Prince Harry, end quote. And then she went on to say that she brings peace and comfort to military families during wartime because, quote, people listen to me. I'm trusted and respected, end quote. I don't know. I guess I'm kind of waiting for Schlesinger to do a Falwell.
I am the con man. They are the con men. I am a maggot. Loot, loot, the dupes.
Reality Radio for a Rational World. The Mike Malloy Show, only on Nova M Radio.
Can you imagine being a person whose spouse is serving in a combat zone? And let's say you're a woman and you've got a couple of kids that you and your soldier have produced, and your soldier husband joined the National Guard or the Reserves. For the financial benefits and also to assist if something came up domestically that needed the sort of discipline that can be delivered by the military and the sort of can-do attitude. And that's why your husband joined up. He didn't join up because he wanted to go kill Muslims or invade another country under false pretenses or get involved in a shooting war. Now, the right-wing pigs that populate 90% of talk radio, of course, tell you that this is an all-volunteer army, and these people knew that what they were getting into. No, they didn't. No, they didn't. Regular army, maybe some of the regular army people did, and every once in a while you hear testimony from a soldier now dead, but before he died he sent an audio tape or videotape home to his parents or to his spouse. And the kid says something to the effect, "After 9/11, I wanted to serve my country." And you think about how that kid's mind was so messed up and perverted by George Bush and Dick Cheney and Donald Rumsfeld, to the point where the kid actually believed that participating in an illegal attack, an occupation of another country, somehow is going to serve his country And it brings tears to my eyes. It does, figuratively speaking, because this has become so common. But imagine all these various situations, and into the middle of this, you have some psychopath like Laura Schlesinger come plodding in with her hawkish, vicious persona and point of view, and physical appearance for that matter, telling these wives who are waiting either to have their husbands come home to be redeployed again, or to come home finally because their service is finished, or to come, there'd be a knock at the door, and there's the chaplain and a grief officer to tell them that their husband is dead. And to have this son of a bitch, Laura Schlesinger, show up and lecture these women? Stop your whining. Stop complaining that you're lonely. Stop talking about you're overwhelmed. Your husband's out there fighting for freedom and democracy. I hate Laura Schlesinger and every radio right-wing thug like her. How dare these people breathe? Oh, man. Is it time for vacation, Kathy? Tommy Thompson, who's, believe it or not, running for president like yawn, who cares? He's the latest to stick his foot into his mouth. What happened here was, when was it? Last Saturday. He was at a state GOP convention in Wisconsin, I guess. Here's what the way the Associated Press reports said. Tommy Thompson cited a dead hearing aid and an urgent need to use the bathroom in explaining on Saturday why he said at a Republican presidential debate that employers should be able to fire a gay worker. You rancid bastard. Speaking to reporters after giving an address at the state GOP convention, Thompson also said he was suffering from the flu and bronchitis and had been admitted to a hospital emergency room 3 days prior to the May 3rd debate. Thompson said, quote, "Nobody knows that. I've been very sick. I was very sick at the day of the debate. I had all the problems with the flu and bronchitis that you have, including running to the bathroom. I was just hanging on. I could not wait until the debate got off so I could go to the bathroom." Now, Thompson said he thought he was being asked if there were enough laws already to address discrimination in the workplace. The question of the debate was, if a private employer finds homosexuality immoral, should he be allowed to fire a gay worker? That was the question. And Thompson replied, "I think that is left up to the individual business. I really sincerely believe that that is an issue that business people have got to make their own determination as to whether or not they should be," end quote. Now, this was not Tommy Thompson's first apology or explanation for the remark. The day after that debate, Thompson said he was sorry and that he had misinterpreted the question because he didn't hear it properly. But on Saturday, he elaborated by saying he lost his hearing in one ear and he had to go potty. He had to go poo-poo. Yeah, this is how weird it's getting. Here's a guy who wants to be president. He said because he had to go poo-poo, that's the reason he said, "Well, yeah, I think employers should be able to fire homosexuals if they want to." No, Tommy, there's something, they're anti-discriminate. Oh, never mind. He had to go poo-poo, Kathy.
I've never heard of homophobia as being a flu symptom.
Well, no, it isn't, but he had to go poo-poo. Aren't you listening to me? Tommy Thompson had to take a poo-poo. He had to go poo-poo. That's why he made his bigoted remark. "I had to go poo-poo. You don't understand. I had to go poo-poo."
Reality Radio for a Rational World. The Mike Malloy Show, only on Nova M Radio.
Six before the hour, Kathy and I and Molly and one of my adult daughters and her daughter, that would be my granddaughter, were together on Mother's Day down at the beach where we hang out. And while we were gone, I checked, you know, I would check in with my email once or twice a day so as not to come back and have 9,000 emails stacked up. I didn't answer any, I don't think, while we were gone. But I got one from Reggie over at TV News Lives, and it's a Mother's Day message to George, and I want to share it with you. It says, "Hey, George, while Laura and Mama Bush are opening their Mother's Day cards, just take a minute to think about the mothers you've sent to fight your freaking wars, and take a nanosecond to think about the mothers of all the troops you've used as fodder for your dreams of empire. I doubt that you're even capable of imagining the kind of Mother's Day they're having, George. Life in your sociopathic bubble doesn't allow for any reality or empathy, so let me clue you in. Here are some of the numbers, George, if you can handle the math. Right now, there are 24,475 women deployed in Iraq and Afghanistan, and close to 40% of these women are mothers. To make it easier for you, that comes to more than 9,000 women celebrating a dangerous and miserable Mother's Day in your illegal and immoral debacle. For the record, as of April of this year, 85 women have lost their lives in your bloody quest for empire. It figures that some of them were, or might one day have become, mothers. Surely most of them had mothers. Thanks to you, they won't be celebrating any Mother's Day ever again. Does that make you proud? And again, for the record, 474 women have been wounded in Iraq as of April 2007. You don't dare show us the severity of their wounds, but we can guess that many of these women have been left with massive wounds and missing limbs and emotional scars that will last for many Mother's Days to come. Doesn't that bother you even a little? I'll bet you didn't know this about military mothers either, George. According to a report today from the Bipartisan Joint Economic Committee, you're short about 35,000 child care centers for military families. Nice going, George. You've also run short on resources for mental health service to help military mothers and their children. Isn't that special? I suppose you were too busy planning your celebrations with Laura and Mama Bush to do anything about this, George. I know you've had a rough couple of months and just couldn't get around to it. Never mind. There's always next year. But for just a second, George, imagine what today must be like for Cindy Sheehan and all the other mothers who won't get Mother's Day cards from the sons and daughters who never came back from your horrible war. Can you do that? There's something so wrong with this picture, George. I haven't even brought up the mothers in Iraq. That's a whole other story that I'll talk to you about another time. Right now, it's Mother's Day in the USA, George, and you've made it a tragic and devastating day for so many American mothers. I hope Laura and Mama Bush have as good a day as the other women I've told you about, George. It's the least they can do. After all, it's been 4 Mother's Days since you and your PNAC buddies led us into this mess, George, and you're all still clueless. Yeah.
But he has a new scapegoat. I mean, war czar.
He has a new war czar, yeah. What else we got here? Jeb Bush, did you see this? Jeb Bush has joined Tenet Healthcare. It's referred to at thestreet.com as a troubled hospital chain. And Jeb Bush is, he's up for re-election, I think it was last Thursday, as one of the directors of this, on the board of directors of this, this company. Assuming he got elected, and I don't know, his pay in his first year would come to nearly $37,000 a day. Now, this is the same Tenet Healthcare that had to pay $900 million to Uncle Sam last summer. That's just shy of $1 billion to settle charges that it had overbilled Medicare and Medicaid over many years. $900 million. The U.S. attorneys announcing the settlement accused the company of fraud and trying to manipulate and cheat the system. Mike Leavitt, the Health and Human Services Secretary, appointed by Jeb's brother, George W. Bush, said the company had, quote, fraudulently abused the Medicare program, end quote. Now, this is the same Tenet Healthcare that just paid $80 million to the IRS after an audit found it owed back taxes going back as far as 1995. The company recently had to restate nearly 5 years of earnings statements after an investigation into its books. And that, according to the writer at thestreet.com, Brett Ahrens, that is just the big stuff. Tenet's recent public filings read like a police blotter. One of its clinics in South Carolina performed 436 open-heart operations without certification. The company is being sued in California by staff claiming they were systematically shortchanged on pay and overtime. Three former Tenet staff members at a New Orleans hospital it owned are under investigation for allegedly euthanizing four patients following Hurricane Katrina. It goes on and on. And by the way, among its current directors is Bob Kerrey, the former Democratic senator from Nebraska. Yeah, that Bob Kerrey. Brett Ahrens also writes, it's lucky the media aren't paying too much attention. Anyone reading the public filings would have discovered that in your first year, Jeb, you'll earn $474,500 for 13 days' work. That's almost $37,000 a day, and the work consists of sitting in a boardroom, so it's not exactly heavy lifting. If the board meetings last an average of 4 hours, you'll be pulling in $9,000 an hour. Who says all the good jobs are going to China, right? As there's some other benefits here. As a non-employee director, you'll get an immediate golden handshake of $260,000 in, quote, restricted stock units, end quote. Nothing says welcome aboard quite like a quarter million, huh? Plus, you'll get another $130,000 in restricted stock units each year. On top of that, your retainer is $65,000 a year, and all that is before you even turn up for a single board meeting. For each one of those you attend, you get another $1,500. Blah, 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 blah. Jesus, God, I hate this family. I hate this family, this Bush crime family. So, but this is so in keeping with the character of the Bush family. Jeb is going to be a director, or already is, by tonight, of Tenet Healthcare Incorporated. $37,000 a day. This is the company that was forced to pay a nearly $1 billion fine to the government to settle charges that it had ripped off the Medicare system. That means it had ripped off the taxpayers, ripped off old people, ripped off the doctors involved, ripped off everybody. These evil sons of bitches. And you know what? They're still in business. You know, back in the day, remember back in the, oh, I don't know, the 60s or 70s, probably the 70s, I used to read it all the time. Back when the Soviet Union was really vile, who was the premier back then in the 70s? Brezhnev? Was it Brezhnev? It was one of those weird-looking bastards, right, who'd stand up there on every May Day parade up on the parapet of the Kremlin or wherever the hell they would stand. And do that little phony-ass, fakey little wave, waving at missiles. Remember that? Ugh. But back in the day, back in those times, when someone was found to be profiteering like this, there would be, kind of like a parody of a trial before several commissars or military authorities or whatever. And your defense attorney would say, but... And the judge would say guilty, and they would immediately take you out behind the courtroom, behind the wherever the hell they try these people, and execute them immediately because they were parasites. And I wonder why that thought never occurred to anybody in this country. Well, the reason is obvious. In the first place, most of us who are civilized don't believe in capital punishment. So why not just lock these pigs up forever? I mean, forever. What's the difference between somebody who does this? These executives with Tenet Healthcare, who does this to our system of delivering what passes for healthcare in this country, which is really a joke, but stealing, thievery, this kind of madness. What's the difference between that and somebody that sells, 10 kilos of cocaine? What's the difference? Who causes the most damage? Huh? Who does? The guy who sells the 10 kilos of cocaine, if he has priors on his record, is going to go to jail for the rest of his life. But these pigs at Tenneth Healthcare, yeah. What, a fine? Oh, sure, okay. Who do we make the check out to? By the way, we're hiring Jeb Bush. Try to screw with us now. We're hiring the president's brother. Huh? You going to screw with us now, you think? Huh? What do you think? And some of you wonder why I call him the Bush crime family?
Man, I had a dreadful life. I'm back in the USA. In the USSR.
Show that never ends. We're so glad you could attend. Come inside, come inside. There behind the glass stands a real blade of grass. Be careful as you pass. Move along, move along. Come inside, the show's about to start. Guaranteed to blow your head apart.
It's 10 before the hour. After the break here at the top of the hour, when we come back, we'd like to hear from you about whatever you'd like to bring up. Whatever is pertinent. This is probably, two more things from us here. Deputy Attorney General Paul McNulty has announced his resignation after 18 months on the job. He becomes the fourth senior Justice Department official to quit about Gonzo Gate. The dismissal of 9 U.S. attorneys last year. In a one-page letter to Attorney General Gonzalez, McNulty said he will leave his post in late summer because of, quote, the financial realities brought on by college-age children and 2 decades of public service, end quote.
And he had to use the bathroom.
He had to use the bathroom. McNulty said in an interview that the political tumult over the prosecutor dismissals, including his role in providing inaccurate information to Congress, that's a polite way of saying he's another lying son of a bitch. None of that played a part in his decision. No. He said he just, he's got kids to support, so he's going to leave. McNulty began work as Gonzalez's deputy in November 2005. He became a central figure in this dismissal mess after he told the Senate Judiciary Committee in February that the White House played only a marginal role in the dismissals, which turns out to be another filthy lie from another filthy, disgusting Bush crime family member. So he's out of there. He also said most of the prosecutors were fired for performance-related reasons. Now, that statement is what angered a lot of these former U.S. attorneys and who had remained largely silent about their departures until that. And as a result of all this, McNulty and Gonzalez, according to the Washington Post, Dan Egan writing the Washington Post, Gonzalez and McNulty have had kind of a rift, a falling out. So here's another one that leaves. I just wonder how much longer. I guess until 09, until the son of a bitch in the White House is replaced. We're going to have to suffer through this. A non-functioning Justice Department, a military that has been hollowed out completely, an absolutely destroyed regulatory system. It just goes on and on. Is there anything this filthy administration has done that benefits the American public? And the answer, of course, is no. I think starting tomorrow night, I'm going to read a little mini essay every night. It's in the current issue of Harper's Magazine. It's a forum called Undoing Bush, How to Repair 8 Years of Sabotage, Bungling, and Neglect. And the descriptive paragraph says, George W. Bush has done more to transform the nation than any American president since Franklin Delano Roosevelt. Indeed, he may well be the perfect anti-Roosevelt. He has taken a prosperous nation and mired it in war, replaced our national composure with terror, left behind a legacy of damage so profound that repairing it will likely be the work of generations. Before the next administration can return to solving the already considerable problems the nation faced in 2000, it must begin to correct the misdeeds and missteps of the current one. And as Roosevelt demonstrated, the road back from perdition cannot be found without a good map. To that end, Harper's Magazine has assembled a group of journalists and thinkers to survey the damage and to determine what may or may not be remedied and to find our way forward. And I think starting tomorrow night, I'm going to read one of these each night. There are 11 of them, I believe. So this means it will go through three weeks of programming, just one mini essay each night. And if you're not a subscriber to Harper's, why aren't you? I don't know if you can get this online or not. You can try. HarpersMagazine.com, I would imagine. What else we got, Catherine?
I was just going to say something about Gonzalez, that who would have thought that Abu Gonzalez, Torquemada himself, would be the last one voted off the island, that he would win Survivor Attorney Gate.
I know. It's amazing. It's probably because he's the one that has the pictures of Laura Pickles Bush and the horse.
With Carl Rove.
Yeah, horseback riding. Paul Wolfowitz is losing it, as most of these freaks do. You know, the member nations of the World Bank are trying to remove this hypocritical son of a bitch. But it's out there now. It was published in The Guardian Unlimited of the UK, and it's also in a huge 33-page PDF file that someone sent me. A testimony from the investigation. So it's true, the language that he used. An angry and bitter Paul Wolfowitz poured abuse and threatened retaliations on senior World Bank staff if his orders for pay raises and promotions for his partner were revealed, according to new details published last night. That was Monday night. Under fire for the lavish package given to Shaha Riza, World Bank employee, Mr. Wolfowitz's girlfriend when he became president, an official investigation into the controversy has found that Mr. Wolfowitz broke bank rules and violated his own contract, setting off a struggle between U.S. and European governments over Wolfowitz's future. Sounding more like a cast member of The Sopranos than an international leader, in testimony by one key witness, Mr. Wolfowitz declares, "If they F with me or Shaha, I have enough on them to F them too." Boy, these guys like the F word, don't they? Now, see, he can say that, and it gets published in The Guardian of the UK. Why can't I just go ahead and quote him, Kathy? Can I quote him? No? What, you're saying Ian, back at the home office, is sitting there with his finger poised over the button? Yeah, he probably is. If they F with me or Shaha, I have enough on them to F them too. And it was, and Cheney told, who did he tell? Biden? Or he told somebody in, who was it? Leahy? Patrick Leahy to go F himself? Oh my. I think I should just read the quote. I think I'll just read it. If Welcome back. It's about 7 past the hour. Just want to drop this in, and then we're going to go to your phone calls. You've probably been noticing that there's a private equity firm that is attempting to, and may have succeeded by now, to take over Chrysler. The Daimler part of Daimler Chrysler wants to get rid of Chrysler, and this will be the first time that a private equity firm. I mean, this is astonishing stuff. But the name of the firm is Cerberus. And AE writes to me, Cerberus, the private equity firm that has taken over Chrysler, includes John Snow and Dan Quayle on its board. In Greek, Cerberus means demon of the pit. Why must these private equity firms advertise that they're evil? Consider, for example, that Mormon priest Mitt Romney calls his private equity firm Bane, which means the bringer of ruin. Do these people so despise the lives they callously ruin just to make a quick buck? And then AE has something else in there. And a quick search on those words. AE is basically absolutely correct. But Cerberus also, if you remember, it is the, not the Anubis, but that's Egyptian mythology. But Cerberus in classical mythology is the dog, usually represented as having three heads, that guarded the entrance to hell. The Anubis, that was the, wasn't that, Kathy, the half-dog, half-human beast that would devour the person whose heart was weighed and if against a feather. I believe that's how the that mythology went. And if the evil that that person had committed during his or her life outweighed a feather, then the Anubis would immediately attack and rip him to pieces. But I think that's Egyptian, and Cerberus is... Greek. And then Bane, the quickest definition of Bane is a person or thing that ruins or spoils. So I get the point, AE, and I don't know why they do this. I guess because they figure that people like you and I are dumber than dog droppings. And we don't know mythology. The only mythology they assume we know, I guess, is Christian mythology, that we don't understand to any degree Greek or Roman or Egyptian mythology. What else do we have? I think that's about it. All right, at 10 minutes past the hour, let us do some phone calls, and we will, there's, as always, there are several topics that I wanted to get to tonight, but I just can't do it. And I guess the reason was for the late breaking story that in Christian mythology, hell opened up in order to take in one more huge lump of wasted ectoplasm in the form of Jerry Falwell's dead, bloated body. That kind of screwed up the first hour. Let's go to your phone calls. Alain is calling from Helsinki, Finland. Is it Alain?
Yes. Yes, Mike, it is. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Welcome to the program.
Yeah, so well, I'm glad you're back. God, there's so many things to talk about, and, you know, I share your frustration. I mean, like, every day is just, like, just one unbelievable thing after another, but...
Isn't it?
The recent the recent election in France, though, was, I think, quite interesting. 85% of the people voted.
Right.
85%. You know, and I mean, of course, it was a divisive election, and the person who I wanted to win lost, but it was so easy to vote. You know, my father lives in New York, and all he did was go to the embassy and he voted. Whereas for me to vote in the presidential election, I had to send a letter to the D.C. Board of Elections because that's where I used to live. And then they had to send a letter. They had to send the ballot to me, and then I had to mail the ballot back.
And it had to be postmarked before a certain date, if I'm not mistaken.
That's right. And they were late getting the ballot to me, so I sent the ballot via DHL, and they screwed up. I mean, it went to America, came back to Belgium, and then arrived in America after the election was over. I was refunded. Yeah, DHL to me means deliveries hilariously late. But, yeah. But so anyway, I have no idea whether my voting counted or not. So I guess one of the things I would love for you to ask, if you could ever get one of these candidates on, is, you know, there are millions of us, you know, expats living around the world.
Right.
Why is it so hard for us to vote?
I guess they figure that most expatriates are going to be, I say most, not all, but most, 50% plus one, are going to be Democrats or liberals or progressives. Otherwise, why would you leave such a wonderful place like America, unless it was for some dark, nefarious reason, like, oh, I don't know, work, a good job, education, or maybe because you like the culture better. Because right-wingers don't do that. Republicans, conservatives stay right here and you know, pollute the country and destroy our system. So I guess the assumption is that the foreigners, expats, are for the most part going to vote Democratic, so screw them. I'm just guessing here. I don't know.
Yeah, well, no, that probably sounds right. You know, I just... It just amazed me. I have no idea whether my vote was counted or not.
Well, if it came in after the election, the answer is a quick absolutely not. Remember, voting in the United States of America is not a right. It's a privilege.
Yeah.
You know, in most so-called democracies or in most societies where the experiment at self-governing is still ongoing, voting, and I think that's why the French turn out in the numbers that they do, most countries turn out in these huge numbers to vote, is because it is a right. And people not American understand that a right not taken advantage of will disappear.
Yeah. My father was able to early vote, just went into the embassy like several days before the election. No problem. Absolutely no problem whatsoever.
Uh-huh.
I mean, the experience I went through was nuts. And then the only other thing that I really think needs to be paid attention to, again, is the dropping dollar. It's just unbelievable. It dropped below the $2 level in the UK. I mean, it's recently come back. But if you could just get somebody on your program one day and try to explain what is even keeping the dollar afloat. There are more euros in circulation now than there are U.S. dollars.
Yeah.
And it's just a mystery to me as to what's keeping it afloat.
I don't know either. And I have friends who travel in the U.K. Periodically and recently came back and said you would not believe what it costs in American dollars for a hotel room or breakfast. It's just astonishing because the dollar is plunging. It's almost, I won't say it's almost worthless, but it's plunging to the point that on the other hand, that is kind of good for the American worker that still produces things in this country because it makes everything here dirt cheap for foreign buyers because the dollar is essentially worthless. So, you know, these topics, economic subjects, I should say, kind of make me make my eyes go bloodshot. But I understand what you're saying, and it probably would be a good topic to get into some night.
Yeah, yeah. And then the other thing is, I mean, as far as the current crop of candidates, you know, I really like Denis Kucinich. I mean, just to the people back home, we need somebody who is competent, you know, to run the country. I mean, my God, the problems are just... They're just insurmountable. How in the world are we going to get out of this mess?
Well, that's what I'm going to start tomorrow night reading a little mini essay. There are 11 of them, I believe, inside the current issue of Harper's Magazine. You can probably access it online, harpersmagazine.com. But it's how to reconstruct this society. It's called Undoing Bush: How to Repair 8 Years of Sabotage, Bungling, and Neglect. But you're right. We have some problems that seem to be almost insurmountable. Elaine, got a break here. Thank you very much for checking in. Take care, okay?
I'll try it again. Thanks.
Okay. Thanks, Elaine. Bye-bye. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.
I am the egghead. I'm the commander. I'm the decider. Cuckoo, cheese.
you.
I'm the decider, and I decide what is best, and what's best is for Don Rumsfeld to remain as the Secretary of Defense.
Sitting in a White House garden, talking to the Lord. But my thoughts would be busy, busy hatching if I only had a brain. I am the egghead. I'm the commander. I'm the decider.
I believe that it's very important for people to be to listen. Therefore, I'm a person who does a lot of my work in private.
He just, the dumb bastard, just reveals so much when he makes statements like that, doesn't he? I've never, you know, these are not malapropisms. This is just a freak. How this happened? Ah. How this happened, that this man is president twice. Back to your phone calls in a second. There we are. Scott is calling from Federal Way, Washington. Hey, Scott.
Yeah, you know, you don't get to feel what you feel, but whatever it is you feel about old Robinson.
Yeah,
not Robinson. What's his face?
Falwell. Yeah.
Well, the two are the same as far as I'm concerned. But you know, as far as I'm concerned, I didn't celebrate his death, but I can't sit here and say that I felt sorry to hear that he was gone. You know,
right.
I had more sympathy for somebody like Mother Teresa when she passed, because she really did do good in the world. But as far as this person is concerned,
yeah,
you know, bye bye. But, yeah, I was going to mention a little something about Dr. Laura Schlesinger. I mean, she, the lines in her face just make her look like a bitch. I mean, I mean, she's just, you know, and I actually did to some extent when she was on TV in the early 90s when she used to do the TBS specials and she used to make the talk show rounds and stuff. Now, I actually did some of her advice. Actually, was not half bad. But you know what got me was the hypocrisy about her life. You know, she would talk about families and stuff, and
right.
She didn't even have a good relationship with her mother, and you know, been what once or twice divorced and all of that kind of stuff. I mean, you know, all of these whack jobs are just lined with hypocrisy.
That's true.
Down the line. I mean, you know. I remember when she had that talk show for a minute, and she had a guest on there or something, and they had taken a poll, and I guess the kid's father, I don't know, she was a preteen or something,
mm-hmm.
He found out that her father had been cheating on her mother, and her advice was that the kid should have confronted her father about it, and she took a poll in the audience, and most of the people in the audience said no, that really was not for the kid to go to
right.
do, and she goes, no. What is wrong with you people?
You do a pretty good Dr. Laura.
She's just, I don't know.
I have to say, since she's been out of the Atlanta market, I did not realize that Dr. Laura is still on the air because I never see her. Of course, I don't watch Fox News. I know Hannity has a thing for her or vice versa. I don't know, but... And I know she appears on his program quite a bit, and I know that because people send me lots of clips from YouTube or whatever of Hannity and Schlesinger going at it, you know, on the topics that they love to chew on. But I honestly didn't know that she was still on the air. It seems like she's been on the air forever. You know, she's been on the air for what, 15 years?
Well, yeah, I guess she still has a radio show now. She's been off as far as TV for many years.
Yeah, that's what I mean, radio. I do remember, though, that when years ago when I used to listen to the program simply for the freak value, she was always talking about her son. And I remember just thinking, oh, this poor kid, you know, what would it be like to have Laura Schlesinger as your mother? And then to realize that she only raised him so that she could use him as some sort of a political statement to send his poor, young, uneducated ass into the military. And now she says that, oh, yes, my son is overseas, but I'm not going to say where, because they'll try to get him the way they would want to get Prince Harry, who happens to be in line to be, I think he's third in line to be King of England. What does this woman think? That somebody would go after her son because, I don't know. It's amazing to me. It's just amazing. These people.
You have to feel sorry for his son because he knows that nobody over here loves him because, you know, she's the type of person that didn't even know when her mother passed and couldn't care less about it.
For days.
You know, just imagine, you know, if something happens to her son over there.
Yeah.
So, you know, I just, all of these talk show hosts, these sickles are just, they're just filled with hypocrisy. And
God, I hate them. I just hate them. And a lot of people warn me about hating. You know, Malloy, come on, you can't hate. And all I can answer back is, you know, what am I supposed to do? I can't be like Gandhi or Christ, Jesus or Martin Luther King. You know, I'm just a common person. And these people just make me sick, Scott. Right. And I just hate them. I hate them. And I don't know. I advise my children, my grandchildren, don't hate. Try to understand, but I think I'm going to change a little bit and say, try to understand, but if you can't understand, hate the sons of bitches. I mean,
yeah, you have to understand, you have to look at their history and see what they're
right.
about.
Right, and then try to understand your hate. Scott, I got to leave it there. Thanks a lot, pal. I appreciate you checking in. Yeah, what's wrong with hate? I don't know.
Got a black magic woman. Got a black magic woman. I've got a black magic woman, got me so blind I can't see. That she's a black magic woman.
Rick James? Ow!
Well, you saw those pictures of Dr. Laura.
I'm sorry?
I said you saw those pictures of Dr. Laura.
Yeah, well, that's true. Rick James. Can't believe it. That was back in the day when music was still music.
Yeah, our last caller, I think it was Scott, did a pretty good Dr. Laura impersonation, but he has to get that, you know, that vocal range up to where only dogs can hear it.
Yeah,
when he
true.
Gets squeaky.
Can you do Dr. Laura?
I used to be able to, and then I stopped, you know, snorting helium, and it just became impossible because the one Dr. Laura moment that sticks out in my brain was when she was interviewed. It might have been Hannity and Combs. It was something, I think it might have even been like Larry King,
yeah.
But she was talking about her intellectual and spiritual love for Donald Rumsfeld because he was a man who spoke with such moral clarity. Gosh. And then she went up and was talking about how, you know, he was just all gung-ho for the troops, and that just made it go, oh, and, you know, it made your ears hurt and cats were crying and
yeah.
Scary. But, yeah, I used to be able to do Dr. Laura pretty well. Thank you for calling. Now go take on the day.
It's difficult living with such a multi-talented person. Back to your phone calls. David is calling from San Francisco. David, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike and Kathy. Hey, before I started, I wanted to rage a little against Falwell, too, but I was going to let you know that we're going to have, this is the 40th anniversary of the Summer of Love, and we've got 3 days booked for different concerts out here. I don't know if you have any intent to get out here. Let's see, I think we're looking at the 22nd of July or the 18th and 19th of August.
I don't think I could do it anymore.
Well, dude, man, we were looking at having Moody Blues.
Well, that's probably the reason. You know, for those of us who are around like you during the original Summer of Love, you know, in order to, in first place, it costs too damn much to have the wheelchair and the rocking chair sent out You know, before I come out there, you know, I'm getting old. Aren't you? Aren't you? Don't you think that?
Well, you remember Copernicus, right?
Copernicus, the astronomer.
Yeah, I used to babysit for him. Hey, you know, I wanted to rage a little against Falwell. I guess also before I did, I happen to think you were talking about Wolfowitz, and in fact, you played a little clip about, or you started to go off on the things that he was talking about. It's kind of interesting, you know. I'm actually on the board of directors of a credit union, and it's really important that I don't do anything that's a conflict of interest. My purpose on the board is to advance the credit union and to bring it into some fruition. If I get into a battle with the other membership and help drag it down, I'm seen as a liability. I'm not a smart person for threatening other members and doing it in a public way. And for Wolfowitz to show his loyalty to not just something like the International Monetary Fund, which is seen as a United Nations entity, but the idea that the world's economy is greatly hinged upon the International Monetary Fund, and that that guy would allow his personal vanity to help destroy the world.
Oh, you sure. That's not a surprise to you, though.
Well, of course not. But it just, I mean, the guy is very public. And, you know, it's kind of interesting because it also shows his contempt for the International Monetary Fund. He's probably one of these, as a neocon, he's probably always hated it, like, you know, most of the...
Well, that's the thing. When their mission statement is to, a part of their mission statement is to ease global poverty. You take a look like somebody like Paul Wolfowitz, who couldn't give a damn about global poverty. Why is that hard for me to say tonight, Kathy? Who couldn't give a damn about global poverty. Yeah, it does seem totally out of character for Wolfowitz to be in that position.
Well, the International Monetary Fund isn't to just deal with global poverty. It's to deal with global stable economy for the world.
Right.
And he doesn't give a crap about that either.
Right.
So.
It's amazing. It's amazing to find a Paul Wolfowitz involved in something like that. Obviously, his motives are not pure. His objective is not the same as the World Bank, although a lot of people can make an argument the World Bank is nothing more than another vehicle for predatory capitalism. So, you know, you step back and place your bet and, you know, do whatever you want to do.
Well, whether it's crony capitalism, as he'd like, or predatory capitalism, or, it's a whole nother subject to go off on why the World Bank was founded and the dream of it. It's been a bait and switch with the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund. You know, when Franklin Roosevelt and the Bretton Woods got it put together some 50, 60 years ago, and then the bait and switch that it's turned into with Nixon and with Eisenhower and ever since, you know, it's been the cronies making their way into it and looting it. So it's all bait and switch.
You just have to wonder, David, how in the hell the whole ship is remaining stable to begin with. David, I got to move on. Up. Oh, that was a little bit abrupt. Sorry, David. Didn't mean to cut you off that quick. Kathy is a little bit fast on the trigger tonight.
I'm sorry.
What?
Please, David, forgive me.
Now go take on the day. D.B. Cooper is calling from somewhere in western Michigan. Hey, D.B.
Hello, Mike. How are you?
Doing fine. How are you?
Good, good. You know, I just had a little bit of a revelation, and it's what I wanted to talk about. And it's kind of off topic, although I can share your sentiments about the late Jerry Falwell.
Now, you had a revelation. An angel appeared to you, or is this a different kind of revelation?
No, it was kind of like I said, you know, good riddance.
Oh, okay.
But nonetheless, which is kind of what I've gotten from most of the things I've listened to today. But today, actually a couple of days ago, I was reading about the Merck pharmaceutical company.
Right.
And their OxyContin problem. Three of their executives had to end up paying $600 plus million.
Really?
Yeah, because they misrepresented the product.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and they didn't say anything about the addictive purposes of it.
Well, gee, pharmaceutical company executives misrepresenting their product. No, that didn't happen.
That would never happen, would it?
No.
Oh, never, never. Okay. So anyway, what I found out after doing some research was that, you see, oxycodone, the primary ingredient, is an opiate.
Right. That's one of the reasons Limbaugh liked it so much and got so hooked and ruined his eardrums.
There you go. I didn't even read about the eardrum part, but okay.
Yeah, it can make you deaf.
Well, yeah. Well, he doesn't want to hear what people want to say back to him anyway, so that makes sense.
That's true.
All right. So anyway, there was a patent, and I have the website up. I was trying to send you the email, but my email screwed up. It happened filed in 1999, October 15, 1999, from somebody in Chesterfield, Virginia, Boehringer Ingelheim Chemicals, Inc., from Petersburg, Virginia. These towns are all within 2 hours of Washington, D.C.
Right, they're suburbs of Richmond. But that's also where Dow or DuPont Chemical used to have... A huge plant. I know, because I lived in Richmond. I had a daughter born there in 1966.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah, well, we've got Dow in Midland, Michigan, too, and you go over there and you can't breathe. But nonetheless, they got away from making oxycodone from opium poppies.
Right.
And it's a patent. It was granted in January 23rd, 2001. So we're going back to the tinfoil hat thing here, Mike.
I see where you're going.
Yeah. Why are we in Afghanistan? We want the puppies.
to protect Merck or whatever the pharmaceutical company is now that produces OxyContin.
Right. It wouldn't matter if it was Merck. It's like there are two things I heard most recently on your own network.
Yeah.
The two biggest money makers in the world, oil and drugs.
Absolutely, and not necessarily in that order.
Well, probably drugs, then oil.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And the Bush family is involved in both and has been
since Reagan.
Well, no, the Bush family, the Bush bloodlines have been involved in both for, what, 100 years?
Yeah,
the Bush family, not the Bush crime family, but the Bush family, is a criminal enterprise that far exceeds anything that American branches of the mafia ever succeeded in.
Okay.
In terms of crime, murder, mayhem, destruction, death, prostitution, drugs, the Bush family itself would make the Gambino family look like, you know, a bunch of chumps who bet on horse races.
Yeah, I was just thinking that Martin Scorsese could probably do a pretty good movie about them.
Oh, my God. He certainly could. Hey, listen, I got to leave there. DB, always good to hear from you. Take care, okay?
Same here, Mike. Good to talk to you, bro.
All right. We'll talk to you again. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Too much poppy cultivation in Afghanistan. We got to work together to eradicate poppy. The country is quite famous for growing pomegranates.
Yes.
Or honeydew melons.
Check on the standards applied on the most stringent conditions when my dad was president of the United States, a 15-year period.
Yeah, out of the 60 I've been alive. Thanks to Ian Huff, who engineered the program tonight and also handled your phone calls at our flagship station in Phoenix, KPHX. Chris in Minnesota is our senior correspondent. Mark Marshall is our webmaster, and thanks to the moderators at MikeMalloy.com on the message board. Catherine Bay is our executive producer. Bill in Phoenix emails in, it's not Merck, it's Purdue Pharma, the makers of OxyContin, and three of its current former executives pled guilty Thursday, I guess this was last Thursday, to misleading the public about the drug's risk of addiction. Purdue Pharma, its president, its top lawyer, and its former chief medical officer will pay $634.5 million in fines for claiming the drug was less addictive and less subject to abuse than other pain medications. Purdue Pharma. Bill also adds, I was just wondering what the Republicans would say if a regarding Wolfowitz. What would the Republicans say if a Democrat had a girlfriend who was Muslim and had a top secret security clearance at the U.S. Department of State? the Democrats aren't saying anything about that now, but the Republicans, yeah, they would be blue in the face, Bill. They would go insane, just like Bill Clinton, you know, had a girlfriend. Well, so did Newt Gingrich. But, well, you know, Republican, Bill, you got to understand something. Republicans are better human beings than Democrats, much better, much more honorable. Right? Robert is calling from Miami, Florida. Robert, welcome to the program.
Hello. Yes, I was going to mention a couple things from the Republican debate tonight that I happened to catch when I probably should have been listening to you. then I turned back to your program. And I thought it was interesting. Romney, the guy who ran as a liberal a couple times in Massachusetts, you know, and he was basically 80% liberal as far as what anyone could see, now says that we should double the size of Guantanamo, because the detainees have no access there to lawyers. And therefore it's good that we have more people in there who have no access to lawyers. And I thought to myself, you know, if they're so certain of their case against these people, then what are they afraid of the lawyers? Or that's one thought. Second thought was the objective, non-political people who go over to Afghanistan and Iraq and who study this issue say that the people in Guantanamo, about 75% of them are just people walking around. They were caught in sweeps that didn't really do anything. Just happened to be in the geographic area.
Right.
And so, therefore, in other words, yes, there are some bad people there, but no objective person is saying it's the majority of the people there. And even this administration has quietly behind the scenes let a lot of these people that were just caught in the sweeps, let them go after being in prison for 4 years in 95 degrees in concrete blocks.
Oh, it's incredible.
And,
yeah.
And so he wants to double it. So I thought that's very odd. And then, Ron Paul, who they all hated because he was against the war from the beginning, and I'm not for Ron Paul on a lot of other issues, but he was been consistently, years before Bush ever got into office, he said we should only go to war against countries if we have a reason to go to war, which actually should be the standard. I mean, you should have some kind of a reason, and the reason for going to war should exceed the reasons against. I mean, it should be a balancing act, not just you don't like Saddam Hussein, so concoct something.
Right.
And so they were very angry at him because they asked a question about the 9/11, and he said that the U.S. intervention over the years, the decades, not just in Iraq, but in other places in the Middle East, led to them hating us and led to them wanting to create this attack. He said it was not because of our freedom and wealth, which I think is a little bit of our wealth. So I disagree with a little bit. I think our wealth flaunted in the movies had a little bit to do with it because we flaunted a little too much. But in any case, the point is that instead of talking reasonably, saying the reasons they disagreed, Giuliani tried to twist it and make it look like Ron Paul was saying they were justified in attacking us, which was not what he said. But they can't reason, they can't say, that's an interesting argument, Ron Paul, here's why I disagree with you. They have to twist it and make it look like he was for the 9/11 attacks.
Because he was
right on the war from the beginning.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying, but surely, at this point, you don't expect Rudy Giuliani or Mitt Romney to say anything that is substantive, that is not a complete 180 degrees from what they were saying 6 months ago. Romney and Giuliani are both... they're fakes. They're liars. You know, because John Kerry said he voted for funding of the war and voted against the war. You know, the pigs in the Republican Party, which is all of them, started screaming flip-flopper. But with these two, Giuliani, who is essentially a coward, and Mitt Romney, who is essentially a psychopath, There's no accusation of flip-flopping with these guys, even though in order to get elected to begin with in their respective states, they had to come across as fire-breathing liberals on every single social issue, or they wouldn't have gotten elected. Yeah. Come on, New York, Massachusetts, give me a break.
And Chris Wallace's actual question to Ron Paul, which they will edit out, like if you watch this on CNN, they will take the question out, I'm sure. But the actual question that precipitated this was amazing. He said, you disagree with Bush's war policies, you disagree we should be there, et cetera. Why are you running as a candidate of the Republican Party? Why don't you run on the other party? And in a Republican crowd, which was the Republican crowd, this was intended as an insult to him. Well, the question, in a sense, was, that you have no right to be in this party unless you agree with Bush, which is more like a Nazi communist type thing. If you disagree with the leader of our party, you have no right to be in this party, which was never the way we used to conduct politics in America. You used to have the right to disagree within a party.
Yeah. Well,
now they want a unified belief system within the party.
Well, that's the Nazi communist totalitarian mindset that exists 100% in the Republican Party and about 60% in the Democratic Party. Robert, I have to leave it there. Thanks a lot for checking
in. Thank
you. All right. Take care.
Bye.
God, I'm glad we're back from vacation, Kathy. Aren't you? You know, if I would have planned my life right, man, we could be retiring now. But, you know, I'm going to have to work until I'm about, I don't know, my late 70s. Jesus. Thanks for participating tonight, Truth Seekers. We do appreciate it. We'll see you tomorrow night. Okay? Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is the Nova M Radio Network.